Hello, Sarah Golding here, and welcome to the first of a series on episodes on perinatal and postnatal depression, with humongous thanks to the Wellcome Trust and the folks responsible for the Pulse Awards, which have enabled this podcast to happen. Thank you. So today, we hear from the wonderful, inspiring and hugely talented Lara Parker. She's my buddy from way back when. We did a show together about 20 years ago, I think it was now. Oh my gosh. And this episode focuses on her battle with postnatal depression. We chat reasons for the depression, pregnancy issues and pain, how she coped or didn't during and after the pregnancy. And we look at the moment her amazing son was born and how she felt after, quite frankly, the trauma of birth. And I do have to say that now and for a very good long while, she has an absolutely amazing relationship with her cheeky, happy, adorable, amazing little son now. So this is a shining example of, well, how things that seemed desperate and difficult, and other words beginning with D, can be traversed, and you can come out the other side. Things do heal. You heal. Is that the right word? Don't know. But with time, with information, self-care, and of course the support of others. So we start with the audio fiction of Charlie and Rachel arriving at Gabby's house having been summoned. Charlie's brought her mum too, who seems a little high on a concoction of strange drugs, possibly alcohol too, to help her cope with the anxiety over the PTSD, which we explore later in this season. Now, I wrote Gabby as a kind of rather grumpy and sharp character. Now, I do just want to point out that these are theatricalised versions of these types of folks, and in real life, Laura is actually bloody lovely. So, enjoy. Gabriella, let us in, and we'll blow this house down. Gabby?
Well, we know she's in because she called us. Try the plant pot, fourth one.
She doesn't put it. Oh my God, she does. Well, that's not safe.
It's a covered porch.
Oh, but what if someone saw us? We can't put it back there. That guy looks dodgy, for example.
It's her neighbour.
Hi, Roger. Nice shorts. You can do my friend's car next if you like. It needs a wash.
Oh, so do you. And cool down.
Hi, Roger.
Tom.
Shut up and go in.
Mum, come out. We're going in.
Why has she come with us again?
Just worry about her. Go and help pull her out of the car, will you, Rach?
Gabby, where are you? Is the kettle on? Gabby?
Oh, what are you doing in here? You all right? You've been sick. Because you know my gag reflex is bad.
Not been sick.
All right, Gabs?
No.
Okay. Come on, Mrs. Hubbard, let's get you settled in the lounge.
Why are you on the floor there? You hurt? What's happening?
No, I'm not. Look. Fucking look!
Hooray!
Not hooray, Charlie.
Okay, I mean, cheer. Okay, how many have you done?
Seven.
Seven? Blimey, you're rich and they're all...
All positive?
Fuck.
I can't do that again, Charlie. I can't.
Your mum's in there. She's a bit tired, so she's on the sofa. I put some of that Bright Sessions podcast on for her. She likes that, right?
Oh, thanks, Rach. Season two, yeah?
Yeah.
Because I'd hate for her to miss the bit where Sam...
No spoilers!
Oh, fine, but she's going to love it when Sam goes back to the plane.
Don't make me get violent on you. No spoilers, right?
All right.
What's up with you, madam? Oh, peeing on these for fun, are you? Can I have a go? What do I win?
Not funny, Rachel.
Come on, up you get. Let's wipe those gorgeous blue eyes and get you out of the bog.
I think I need some help, Jess.
Ow!
Gently. I'm a bit sensitive. I don't believe it. We've been so careful. You understand, I can't... Don't you? I don't want it.
Okay.
Here's how it is, all right? You are different now, right, to the person you were when Daisy was born, and you know me and Rachel got you, right?
We got you, girl. Come on, lounge now. Alley up.
1, 2. Oh, that's a hell of a lot of Pringles right there.
Are you saying I'm fat?
Yeah, we crack a smile. Yay!
You are so annoying.
And you are going to have another... Mum, what are you doing? You frightened the life out of me.
What is she doing?
She's standing in the corner with her face against the walls. It's like Bloody Blair Witch. Mum!
What? Oh, sorry. I don't know what I was. Just cooling my head down. My head feels so hot and this wall is so cool.
Okay, we seriously need to go back to the docks and sort this medication, Mama.
Why is she on so much?
She won't say it. She'll tell me when she's ready.
Is it dementia?
No. More like deep sporadic depression. Dan said it might be PTSD or something similar, but that's for...
That's what war vets get, isn't it? She hasn't seen active service, has she?
Well, she used to be a teacher, so front line in one respect.
Hello? I'm still here too. Nurture me.
Oh, come on. Anyone for coffee?
Take Mum through, will you?
Sure. Do you want a coffee, Mrs. Hubbard? Mrs. Hubbard? Do you want a coffee from the cupboard? Oh, that right?
Ah, but they're spelt so differently. Hubbard is H-U-B-B-A-R-D. And cupboard is...
Yeah, I'll take her to the kitchen. Save a smothering gas.
C-U-P-B-O-A-R-D. Cupboard. A board of cups.
Okay, you. Sit. Chill. Hug?
No, I can't. I don't want to. I'm going to lie down.
Oh, God. How far along are you?
Late. 10 weeks, I think.
And you just found out today? Slow nod, okay. You okay otherwise? No problems or anything?
No, doctor. Just the one main big-ass problem. It's a bit weird when you're this serious.
So are you. I mean, this is great though, isn't it? Are you making Daisy's brother or sister a boy, twins, twin boys?
It better not be fucking twins. Oh my God, my womb would fall out.
Oh, no, it wouldn't.
I don't want it, Charlie. I feel sick. Do you know what I went through with Daisy, truly?
You know I don't, because you shut yourself down. You didn't tell me until you were like 30 weeks you had that DVD thing.
SPD.
And I saw you waddling down the high street like some kind of demented duck.
Thanks for that joyous description.
Yeah, and you were wearing that back brace splint thing and had crutches, and I was like, shit, have you been in an accident or something?
Probably would have been less painful.
But this time, right now, you've asked for help, you know, and that means a lot.
Oh, God, please don't start crying. I hate sentimentalists.
Okay. All right. Hang on. Let me get down on the floor with you. Is it okay to say I hate your sofas?
No.
They are so uncomfortable. You should get new ones. Leather ones with those recliner seats and...
There's nothing wrong with my sofa. It's comfy. Do not want another one. I like this one. I like my family how it is. I do not want another baby. I like the one I had.
Have.
Jesus, why should I call you? You get so bossy these days.
Okay, well, why don't you fill these bossy boots in on why you're such a ridiculous mess on finding out you're about to enjoy the miracle of birth, part 2.
Miracle? Your skin's looking good, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah, it feels okay at the moment, actually. But we were talking about you.
Yeah, me. When I had Daisy, no. Well, it's hard to think. My brain's racing, you know? Yeah. See, all I replay in my mind at the moment is being in that delivery room. All I can think about right now is the moment she was out after over 7 months of feeling sick, 6 months of wearing a fucking uncomfortable back brace for my SPD, 8 months of sleepless pain-infused nights and 2 days of feeling fucking terrible labour pains. And then...
Your legs parted and made a baby.
Oh, God, I wish it happened that quickly, but no. I was trying to push her out and failing miserably. 100 people must have looked up the goal end, just witnessed a very bloody and boring half-time. God, that was horrible. And when she was out on me, here, I thought, that's not mine. What is it? This screamy, teeny thing? This isn't mine. Take it. Get it away. And I hated her for a good little while because, she ruined my life. My body, my marriage for a bit too. She bloody ruined it.
I can't say that. You and Gordon are one of the strongest couples I know.
And Gordon finds out, and now I'm getting a divorce.
You haven't told him.
Nope. This new life wants to begin, and I want to end mine because whatever happens next is going to be terrible.
Oh, my God, shut up with the petulance and woe is me. Jesus, you drama queen. Screaming, screaming till I'm sick, sick, sick. Ow.
Sorry, you're being annoying.
You can't talk like this, though, Gab. She's beautiful. Daisy, She's amazing and cute and funny and confident and healthy and happy and actually hilarious. I mean, if you think about it, you're so lucky to even
Don't you fucking tell me how fucking lucky I am to have her. Don't you even fucking dare.
Oh, all right. Okay, I am going to start a swear jar in this cup. maybe not that one. Oh, my God. If anyone needs penicillin, there's loads here.
Shut up.
What?
Never mind. Where's my coffee?
In the kettle. We're just stealing all the good biscuits.
Oh, fuck's sake, that was right in my ear.
I feel I have enough money in here for a meal and a few pints by the end of the hour at this rate.
Oh, fuck the actual off.
50p.
Of course. I know there's a gazillion women who can't or won't ever conceive, naturally or otherwise. I know that. But they're not me. They're not in my shoes. They're not walking my miles.
Everything's in kilometres these days.
They don't know how I feel. I don't know how they really feel, and they never will, and I never will, so I don't actually give a fuck what...
A pound!
Oh, people think, say, or do, because this is my life and my body and my marriage and...
Okay, breathe, for fuck's sake. Oh, shit, I swore.
Pound.
Okay, right, okay. Question for 10 points. Did you get help? Once she was born. I mean, Daisy. They helped you, right? The docs, the health visitors. Was it like depression or the pain or what's going on?
That was like 5 questions.
You know I multitask. I have a woman's brain, sir. I'm going to have to hurry for your answer to any of the above.
I never hurt her, Charlie.
No.
I never would.
Oh, I know.
I did think about it. Isn't that bad? Am I a bad person, Charlie?
No. God, no, of course you're not. No, 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 no. You're one of the best I know. I mean, bloody hell, you nearly killed yourself in helping me out before.
Yeah, I suppose. There was this one time when I was in the car and in my head I didn't stop at the T-junction and I just drove us both straight into a brick wall. Or we were at the beach and I'd think, what if I just hold her and wade in? Wade in, keep going.
If you'd lighted yourself up nicely at Bognor Easy, she could have had afternoon tea in La France. Oh, la la, mon petit chouchou. probably a good swim on a hot summer's day, that.
I just couldn't stop the bad thoughts creeping in.
You got help, right? You got through it, and she's 3 now, and she's not as nice as my 2, mine, but she's...
It was things like, if I had to put myself... my body and my relationship through that phase of life again, I'm not sure we would survive it.
Oh, no.
And I'm not sure that putting Daisy through that version of pregnant me that I know I will become, I'm not sure that would be fair because I can see me now. I'm being horrible already, the nasty and snappy and...
Well, maybe it's like you just... like unwell and we have to help treat
it. Unwell. No, I'm not unwell. I'm just not being me? I wasn't me the last time. I wasn't the me that I knew, and I wasn't the me that most people knew. And I don't want to be that me. You see, in hindsight, there was no way I could have got back to me without help. And so, it's probably stupid, but it's why I called you.
I'm glad you're happy, dickhead. Do you feel different already to when you weren't pregnant to now?
I don't know. Other than the massive anxiety and feelings of impending doom and growing niggly pains downstairs, I mean, I've never thought of myself as a particularly highly strong person, but now I think I'm quite highly strung.
Well, maybe sometimes a little bit.
You're not meant to agree.
To be honest, mate, I'm still in shock. I have children and they're like 3 and 7 now. The ones I know about anyway.
Huh? It's random.
Random is as random does. Listen, I know in my heart that I'm certainly not responsible or grounded up enough to have them at all. And I feel everyone else is so, like, adult. And I've got these little ickle grey blue child eyes and brain looking out and pretending I'm older. And I think I'm keeping you full.
I don't want to go through all that again, Charlie. I can't do sleepless or that amount of perpetual pain or the strain on us. I felt really alone, Charlie, even when I was with so many good people.
Well, you can feel the most alone in a crowd of people. Okay, well, what advice would you give someone who felt like you last time?
Talk.
Good. Well, you're doing that. What else?
Whether you take it, write it, you sing it, draw it, you have to get it out. Don't hold it in. It doesn't matter who you talk to. If you have a cat, you've got a wall, talk to the wall. If it's primal scream therapy that works for you, then do something. Find a way of getting it out, because there's nothing worse than feeling you've got to bottle it all up.
Awesome advice. Now, take it.
No.
Hang on, why is there this ice cream scoop under your sofa? Never mind. Look, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you are taking your own advice because we're talking, yes, about you and what you're worried about. I'm your cat, your wall.
You want me to primal scream in excitement?
No. I just need to remember that all things shall pass. You won't, and no one should feel shit forever, right? Whether you do something about it or you don't, not every day is going to feel as shitty as today or tomorrow or next Thursday does. If you can't manage a day at a time, manage an hour at a time. If you can't manage an hour at a time, manage 10 minutes. Just don't set massive goals for yourself. Don't go, right, today I'm going to revamp the living room and do the shopping and clean the bathrooms and have the place spotless and cook a dinner from scratch, and next week I'll do this and that.
Yeah.
Just split things up into sensible, manageable bits and bobs. Because that's what I try and do. And just don't beat yourself up if you don't get things done. As long as the priorities of you and babe and fam being safe, being clean, being fed, watered, and also entertained with some fun and change of scenery now and then, well, that's the best you can do, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, if people around you can't cope with how you do what you do, then they're not the right people to have around you. Does that make sense? And this is what's amazing, that you, clever little you, was strong enough and brave enough to call me. And Rachel's here, and my mum's here, and your neighbour Roger with the shorts, I'm sure, would be here if you wanted him to. Well, there you go. What's she going to do? How's she going to deal? Interesting dilemma. And this is even without Freya entering the mix, which we find out how she feels about the situation next time. And it's so important not to judge, isn't it? It's really clear that by listening to this, how can any of us, until we're in the shoes of the folks experiencing these things themselves, have any opinion but to try and help and understand? Some of you may think, snap out of it, or that's a ridiculous reaction to the situation. But
So again, you need to be in the shoes of the person going through these kind of events to even begin to understand that perspective. So here is Lara's first part of her very frank interview, where we explore the ways in which the postnatal depression may well have been caused and also some of the aftermath.
So I'd had some health issues which led me to be advised not to get pregnant for X amount of time.
Right.
And I was told that I would be given the all clear to try getting pregnant in a couple of years' time. And I was, and I did. So I came off the pill and we actively tried.
Huzzah! The practicing is fun!
Yeah, we practiced for a month and then I fell pregnant.
Wow.
I felt quite cheated at that point. Oh. I was like, hang about. This isn't fair.
Too good.
And because we were trying and I was conscious of the fact that we were trying, I knew within, I think, 4.5, 5 weeks, I knew very, very early on. And I went out and took a test. And then really unsubtly phoned my husband and said, what time are you coming home from work? And he was like, the same time I always come home. I was like, okay, I need to talk to you. And he just went, you're pregnant? I was like, oh!
Did he know?
Because we were trying and it was, you know, about the right time.
Amazing.
I think we tried approximately 3 times.
Congratulations.
Just pathetic.
Yeah.
Or congratulatory, depending on which way you look at it. And yeah, initially very elated. And then I think with every, even planned pregnancy, you have that elation and then the, oh my God,
yes,
parent.
Yes.
And then you have that whole thing of, you know, because you're not encouraged to tell people until you're 12 weeks gone.
Uh-huh.
And then you're like, I really want to tell people. And then you go, well, I'll just tell this one person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just tell one more person. And then you end up just going, oh, fuck it, and just telling everybody. You know, which I did manage to hold off till, I think, 12 weeks for most people.
Mm.
And initially, you know, really happy and had wanted to be pregnant for a long, long time, and it was all fine. And then I think would have been about 12, 13 weeks, I had episodes of really unpleasant dizziness, really unpleasant breathlessness, and fainting. And I've never been a fainter, ever.
No.
Some people are. I'm not.
No.
Really embarrassingly fainted at work.
Right.
Was working in recovery in a hospital at the time, so woke up on a gurney in my own recovery.
I'm working here.
Which was wrong on many levels, with my boss going, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I think so.
God, no, yeah.
Managed to domino effect about 8 people on the train on the way into work one day and just, you know, knock 8 people over as I went.
Goodness.
Got quite worried about that. Went to the doctor, got told not to be silly. And that it's all just part of your body growing new life.
Right.
And that, you know, at this stage of pregnancy, it's completely normal to have all these sorts of feelings because your body is trying to produce enough oxygen for 2 people. And of course, it's difficult.
Mm.
So right. I was like,
explained away then, too.
Okay, fine. And I just didn't really think much of it. That passed within maybe 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm.
And I had about 2.5, 3 weeks of feeling great, no problem. I'd already had to tell a couple of people at work because I'd been so poorly, which was not my plan.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I woke up one morning and I had a niggling pain in my hip. And within 3 days, that niggling pain in my hip had become excruciatingly painful.
Right.
And was spreading round to the front and round to the back and into the other hip.
Gosh.
And I got really worried because I was like, my God, what's this? This would have been about 17.5, 18 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I called the midwives. They said it's a bit early for us, talk to the early pregnancy unit. And I'm like, well, it's not early, but okay, fine.
Mm.
They told me to come in. They did an internal examination. They went, oh, you've got SPD.
Right.
And I said, that's a what, is it? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they basically were quite dismissive of it and said, it's a pain that happens when you have too many relaxing hormones within your ligaments and muscles too soon, and it won't go away until the baby's born.
And now, that's like, what's the full title of that? Because I heard that too, but I can't
it's
remember.
Called,
something, please.
It's called lots and lots of different names. Right. So I was told what I had was SPD, which is symphysis pubis dysfunction.
That's the one.
So symphysis is SYMPHYSIS, pubis dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Other people call it PGP or PGD. So it's either pelvic girdle dysfunction or pelvic girdle pain. They all mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Basically, if you imagine your pelvis is a triangle with your mons as the point of the triangle, mm-hmm. your two hips as the size, and then your spine's at the back. It basically does that.
Right. It's just for audio.
Oh, sorry.
It
collapses.
Yeah.
Your pelvic girdle just collapses, basically, and it's things end up grinding on things that shouldn't.
Yeah.
And it's really quite unpleasant.
Yeah, and I do actually had that myself, and mm-hmm. I remember I was collecting Holly, who was three. I was pregnant with Thomas, and essentially, being a pickle, I wasn't getting in the car. I thought, I'm going to chase you, and I'm going to put you in the car. And I basically went to do that and then just jarred, and I could not move. Mm-hmm. I actually thought, oh, my gosh, everyone's gone home from the nursery because mm-hmm. we had a little extra walk. What am I going to do? It was horrific. And you can imagine we had a higher kind of high up car to get into. And so trying to get in and, you know, let alone drive and do anything else. So, yeah, and a dear friend of mine I know had various support things flung at her to just see if that would, you know, stop the exacerbated pain. Mm. So, yeah, so what happened after?
So they told me that's what I had. They were quite flippant about it and said, it's not going to go away until the baby gets here. And I said, okay, what do I do? And they went, well, we suppose we can refer you to physio. We don't really do much, but I suppose we can. And I said, well, can I do anything? And they went, no. And I was like, okay, so I'm stuck. And I said, well, and is it going to stay like this? And they went, oh, it may well get worse. In fact, it probably will. And I'm like, hang about.
Yeah.
I'm only 19 weeks pregnant. And I've got the rest of my pregnancy to go.
Yeah.
And this is already unbearable.
Yeah.
I was waddling like a fat duck.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is, okay, fine. You know, we'll get through it. I've had chronic pain before. We'll get through it.
But, I mean, that's the thing. You say you're chronic pain, and it is. You know, you move and it sort of clicks into place, and then you're happy for a bit and then do something, and then it comes up again.
So I spent the rest of my pregnancy. I got referred to physio, by which point I was already on crutches.
Right.
Because I had my own crutches from a previous knee injury. Right. And I just thought, well, I can't walk, so I may as well use something to try and help me to walk. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the physio basically took one look at me and said, well, you're already on crutches. That's all I was going to do.
Oh, right.
Bye. So I was like, well, great, that's helpful. I had to be signed off work because I couldn't even make the journey into and from work. So that was it. I wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
I couldn't drive very well. I could drive, but not very well. I certainly couldn't walk any distance. Mm-hmm. I spent the rest of my pregnancy not being able to lie down, not being able to sit, not being able to stand, not being able to sleep. Couldn't get in and out of the bath by myself. Sitting on the toilet was excruciating. There was nothing that was comfortable. I had to tie my knees together in bed so that when I rolled over, I didn't jar anything.
Mm-hmm.
Getting in and out of bed during pregnancy was awful. Mm-hmm. Stairs were horrific.
Yeah.
Getting in and out of the car, I ended up having to sit on a plastic bag so that I could swivel my bum out and then leaving myself up. I mean, it was like I had, you know, sort of, I was awaiting a double hip replacement. It was ridiculous.
Sure. Yeah.
And I had, like you said, all sorts of support garments and what have you.
Mm.
And none of them did any good because for them to do any good, you had to wear them so tightly you then couldn't feel your legs after a while. So there's no point in doing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course, you're pregnant. You can't take painkillers except paracetamol, which didn't do anything.
Mm.
And in the end, with some desperate Googling, I found a local lady who, a local osteopath who specialised in pregnant women and children.
Right.
And she did some very gentle manipulation, and I walked out of there without hobbling.
Fantastic.
2 days later, I went back and she did it again.
Right.
I saw her twice a week from, I think, about week 24 of pregnancy until about week 28.
Okay.
On my own money.
I was going to say, that is money. That expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that went down to once a week, but I saw her every week until I had him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and of course, in all that time, I was seeing the consultant because suddenly I was a high-risk pregnancy because I had this.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to the consultant, how is he going to get out?
Yeah.
And she said, what do you mean? And I said, I can't physically open my legs. Mm. How am I going to have this child? And she went, I don't worry about that. We'll deal with that when we come to it. And I'm in my head, I'm going, that's really not a helpful thing to say.
Sure.
Because all I'm going to do is sit here and think about it. I'd rather you just said, well, it will just happen, or you give me some answer. And if you read,
he's not the only person who will have had that condition, for sure.
And then I got to about 36 weeks of pregnancy, and the consultant said to me, so what's the midwife said? And I'm like, what midwife? And she went, Well, the midwife appointments you've been having, I haven't seen a midwife. And because they'd been, because I'd been on the consultants list and I was seeing her like every couple of weeks, had scans and left, right and centre, I'd never seen a midwife.
Oh my gosh.
So that was an omission on their part. I'd seen the consultants, anaesthetist, there'd been an agreement for a very early epidural.
Mm-hmm.
But then other websites I'd read, so the Pelvic Girdle Partnership, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful website that gave me an awful lot of help, suggested in your birth plan that you write down somewhere what your comfortable width of putting your legs apart is, and you do not exceed that, because in the throes of giving birth, you'll do whatever you can to get the baby out, but then you'll pay for it afterwards.
Mm.
And they talk about like tying your legs together and all this kind of stuff, and I talked about an elective C-section,
mm-hmm.
and they absolutely were having none of that because I'm overweight, and they said your healing will be awful, no way, they wouldn't even consider it. And then I asked about being induced early. They wouldn't consider that because there was nothing wrong with the baby.
Right.
So I had a sweep, reflexology.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't moving.
Okay.
So at 40 weeks, exactly, I went in and absolutely begged to be induced.
Mm.
And they said, okay, come in after the weekend and induce you. So I did. They induced me with the pessary.
Mm-hmm.
Things started happening very quickly, and then just kept happening but didn't actually go anywhere.
Right.
And I contracted regularly and painfully for 2 days, but nothing happened.
Goodness. And that is a long time to be in that kind of intense situation.
It is. And also when you think about the fact that I hadn't slept properly since 20 weeks, so I was exhausted before I even got there.
Mm.
It was very busy. They kept talking about giving me diamorphine so I'd sleep, but I didn't.
Right.
No one seemed to accept the fact that being on a hospital bed and strapped up to a monitor and not being allowed to move was incredibly painful for me.
Yeah. Yep.
And everyone was just like, oh, just have a bath. I'm like, I physically can't get in the bath by myself.
Yeah.
It's just, it won't work.
Yeah.
And then eventually, after two days and two nights, the lovely, lovely lady who'd admitted me and started my induction came back on shift, took one look at me and went, why are you still here?
Oh, gosh.
And I burst into floods of tears and was like, they take me to delivery and break my waters, and they didn't.
Mm.
And she was like, right. She came back half an hour later. Mm-hmm. Shoved a syringe full of diamorphine in my thigh,
right.
At which point I don't really remember much, like the next hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I got wheeled through to delivery. They broke my waters. They put an epidural in,
mm-hmm.
which I think by the time all that happened was about 11:30 mm-hmm. in the morning. And I went to sleep.
Right.
Didn't wake up till 6:30.
Wow.
And I was contracting and everything was doing what it should. And I was so tired.
Mm-hmm.
I don't physically remember being in the delivery suite at all, except for when I first got there.
Right.
And then they poked me awake, because I don't actually remember much of this at all. This is all by hearsay.
Mm.
They poked me awake at about 6:15, and said, the baby is having D-cells, can you turn over, because I'm on my back.
Right.
So I turned over, and went back to sleep again.
And then the best sleep you've had for...
Well, the exact drug sleep, but still marvellous. Yeah. And of course, I couldn't feel anything from the waist down.
No.
So it was great.
Yeah.
So then they poked me awake again about 10, 15 minutes later and said, no, he doesn't like that. Can you go back into your back?
Right.
So I did. And my whole body just went, no! And pushed this child out. And I had no control over it.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing, because they're all going to me, don't push, don't push, don't push, you need to turn, wait, and I'm going, I don't have any control of this.
Uh-huh.
And then I got freaked out because they were all shouting at me.
Mm.
And James ended up slapping me and saying, shh, calm down, you have to listen. And I'm like, too many people talking at me, I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing I knew, he was out. He had the cord around his neck, but he was fine.
Okay.
And then someone said to me, and there was a doctor there, I think. I could have been a senior, I don't know.
Yes.
There were people in scrubs, and I think it was her at the business end of everything, and she said, can you pass me some swabs? No, the bigger ones. No, the biggest ones you have.
Wow.
So I'd torn. That's
exactly what you want to hear.
Yeah, and I'd torn and I was bleeding, and then they were talking about taking me to theatre because I was bleeding that much, and then they got it under control. And then there was this noise over there, which I think was probably... but I don't really remember much about it. And then they were like, here's your baby. And I kind of went, what? No, it's not.
Mm.
Baby? What are you talking about? And I was so off my face on no sleep, drugs, trauma, and just overstimulation. I just didn't feel like he was mine at all.
Right.
And then they left and were like, you know, have some bonding time. And I just kind of went, it's not mine. I don't know whose it is, but it's not mine. Mm-hmm. And I vividly remember just looking at him and going, yeah, he's quite cute, but I don't... Meh, really. There was no... And all this stuff you get told about rush of love and all this... Yeah. None of that. Didn't have any of it.
Wow. And you were on your own completely, or was James...
No, James was with me. Mm-hmm. And then they'd said, oh, well, you know, we'll leave you to it for a bit. And then this woman came in, she went, right, up you get. And I kind of went, sorry? And she went, up you get, have a shower. And I've got an epidural in, I literally can't feel anything below my waist. And she went, oh, well, sort that out, and literally ripped it out of my back. And then she went, off you go, have a shower. And I'm going, I can't walk. And she went, oh, for goodness sakes, got a tub and started, like, scrubbing down, basically. And I was like, and then I noticed there was, like, meconium on the sheet and no one had changed the sheet. And,
okay.
And it was all just a bit yuck.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually she got me out of bed and I kind of dodded over to a armchair. And I don't think I was holding at the time. And I think James had him. I could be wrong. And I ended up just putting, like, my head on my arms on a sort of one of those tables that goes up and down.
Yeah.
And I just remember just kind of vaguely passing out on that. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, oh, we'll move you up to postnatal ward. And I was like, yeah, whatever, okay. So I honestly can't remember if I was holding him or not at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I moved up to postnatal ward. They put me in a little room by myself. Put him in a bassinet next to me. By this time it was about midnight. James went home. I went to sleep for 6 hours.
Right.
He didn't wake up.
Right.
And I thought, oh, I've got this licked. Slept for 6 hours. Whoop! Hadn't tried to breastfeed him or anything. There'd been no skin to skin at this point, just because I was just out of it completely.
Mm-hmm.
What, Dunno?
There had been skin to skin.
See, I don't remember. Husband has just said there had been skin to skin, but I don't remember any of it.
It was early on.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. With you or with me?
Both.
Don't remember any of that.
Right.
Literally, physically don't remember any of it.
Mm.
Which in a way also is horrible, because it's those are important things and it just literally just not there.
Mm.
It's fallen out of my head. So James came back in the next morning and I was like, oh, we all slept for 6 hours. It was great.
Yeah.
And we were in hospital for two nights or three nights after that.
Maybe only two. It wasn't that long.
Two or three nights. They wanted to discharge me. And I couldn't pee because I had bruising everywhere. Mm. And so they had to put a catheter back in me for a bit. Every night we were in hospital, he slept for 6 hours, midnight to 6 in the morning. I was like, oh, easy, could do this.
Yeah.
Got home, nope. and yeah, and they said, you know, the pain would go away once I had him. And it didn't, and it never has.
Right.
So I felt very cheated.
Never, not even now.
No. I felt very cheated of all of that.
Wow.
It's changed and it's got different and I've learned how to manage it because obviously I'm not the size of a whale anymore. For the first couple of days, he wasn't a difficult baby.
Mm.
He did a lot of sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
He really wasn't keen on breastfeeding, that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
They kept trying to tell me to express colostrum and put it in a 1 mL syringe and I was like, how the hell am I supposed... And no one showed me how to do this.
Oh, right.
They'd say, are you managing? And I'd be like, well, I don't know, am I? And they go kind of give me a sort of cursory, perfunctory look and go, yeah, you're fine. Right. Just because he was on, but there was no one actually kind of going, actually, is he getting anything?
Right.
No one told me that colostrum is a sedative.
Uh-huh.
So that when you're producing colostrum, babies will sleep naturally more.
Mm-hmm.
Before we were discharged and he was checked over by the paediatrician, I said to the paediatrician, I think he's got a tongue tie. And they all kind of went, that nonsense, he doesn't.
Mm.
I'm a nurse. I know a tongue tie when I see one. He did have a tongue tie. And 2 weeks after we'd been discharged, we paid privately to go and have a snip.
Right. And so you've got all of that gentle trauma still happening.
Yeah.
And you're not physically well.
No.
You've had...
Still exhausted.
And also the aftermath of all of that kind of maelstrom.
Yeah.
What kind of support did you get?
So husband throughout the whole thing was amazing.
Hooray.
Was amazing, still is amazing, is incredibly gentle, kind, understanding, has never sort of made me feel anything less than, you know, me,
mm-hmm.
has always taken me for who I am, has never sort of made me feel stupid or silly for mm-hmm. feeling the way I feel.
Mm-hmm. That's priceless.
Yes, it is priceless. And I'm a very lucky woman.
Hooray.
I have a couple of very good friends, some of whom I have only met since I've had but some of whom I've known for a long time, like Kathy, for example,
mm-hmm. yeah.
who I don't see particularly often, but I know if I picked up the phone and said to her, life's gone to shit, she'd be here in an instant, or I'd be there in an instant, she'd just, you know, it would be no problem ever.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I really hope you've got a pal like Kathy. Hello, Kathy. Or maybe like Charlie or Rachel or Gabby or Freya, or even a mum like Flo. And, well, if not, I hope you think about maybe getting up and getting proactive. Let's go out there and nurture some new friendships. You never know how good a friend and support network can be for support, for sharing, for just lying on the floor with and getting the drinks in on a mum's night out can be. I owe a lot to a variety of mums of various amazingnesses. So if you're a mum and I know you, thank you for being awesome. I mean that sincerely, I really do. I couldn't have enjoyed myself as much as I have if it wasn't for the network of other mums that got me through some crazy days. I'm so grateful to Lara for sharing her very honest, very real experience. And if you resonate with any of this, please do listen to this next section of the podcast where I spoke to the amazing Tracy Greenwood of the Blackpool NHS Trust about where and how folks who think they have this or do have this can find help and information. I am very grateful and excited to welcome to take Tracy Greenwood from the Blackpool Teaching Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust to come and talk with us today. Hello, Tracy. How are you going?
Hi, Sarah. I'm great, thank you. Hope you are too.
Oh, do you know what? Today is actually a good day. Hooray! I hope for folks listening as well, today is one of the better of their crazy worlds that they might be experiencing right now, because obviously things are slightly different right now for everyone. And I think this specific condition as well is something that may be even more so affected by these current times. So can you just tell us a little bit about you and what you do with regards to working with people with postnatal, or as we've previously chatted about, perinatal depression?
I'm a specialist health visitor. I work in Blackpool for perinatal and infant mental health. So my main role is ensuring that health visitors feel supported regarding perinatal and infant mental health when working with their families. I also do some work directly with families. I also do some training on perinatal and infant mental health as well. That is championed by the Institute of Health Visitor Training.
Fantastic. So I think you are more than fantastically qualified to just help us out with a few things over the next few episodes. So the first thing I'd like to pose to you really is just how and where can people with either perinatal depression or postnatal depression find help and information? Where would you send someone to if they suspected or thought they actually did have this condition?
Right, okay. I think it's worth just clarifying for your listeners about perinatal mental health and actually what that entails. We know that postnatal depression is the most common perinatal mental health disorder that women can experience in the first year of life. Mm-hmm. But we also know that the perinatal period is from conception to the age of the child being one.
Yes.
So we know that up to 10% of women can develop postnatal depression. Mm-hmm. But actually, the figures for perinatal illness is quite high. It can be up to 1 in 5 mothers can experience symptoms of perinatal illness in this perinatal period, but also 1 in 9 fathers as well. So it's a really important topic to be discussing today and for parents to get the right information and help. Some parents, some women may at first experience the baby blues and wonder what's quite happening when baby's first born. Mm-hmm. Can generally be in the first few days and it can last up to a week. And 80% of mothers can have these baby blues, which are kind of low mood, feeling a bit anxious, restless, feeling emotional.
That's a massive statistic, yeah. I mean, I feel like that is something definitely that I've experienced as well. It's a little while ago, but, you know, I think that all of those signs are things that I feel resonate with me too. So, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, me too. So if these symptoms, you know, these symptoms are quite normal and only last for a few days. But if they're persistent and they're continuing, then like you say, it's really important that women get the right help and information.
Yeah.
There's some amazing websites out there that can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. The NHS website is an extremely useful website. That's how you can get information and advice. The site also has things such as online self-help booklets and approved audio guides as well, of a range of issues from anxiety to low mood to having trouble sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the nct.org website. That's a really useful site. With lots of information about postnatal depression and also for fathers as well. Because we know that if a mum is suffering from postnatal depression, then it's really important that the partner kind of understands what's going on for that woman, for their partner, and vice versa as well. Because we know that the father can suffer from postnatal depression and they need the support too.
Mm-hmm. So I'd just like to interject, if I may, regards to the NCT, in as much as in the podcast we talk to Lara as herself, and Gabby's character kind of explores a little bit about those networks of people. And I personally also found the NCT a fantastic place to nurture people in networks of folks who were having children at the same time as me. And that has really helped me get through some crazy times. So I would advocate as well that NCT website to find information, and also potential groups of other people to network with.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is a great website. There's also a website called the PANDAS Foundation. So that's a pre and postnatal depression and advice and support. They have a telephone line that you can phone. They have the website, and they also have Facebook pages as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a wealth of information.
Fantastic.
One video that I think is really worth mentioning is called the Perinatal Positivity website. This is a useful animation to explain what perinatal mental health issues can be and how to get that support. So that's a really nice little clip on their site to look at. There's lots and lots of other areas to go to for advice and support as well.
Mm-hmm.
Most areas have a local wellbeing mental health helpline, and this is available. It's a listening environment for anyone wanting emotional support, and also having support on where to go to gain more further support if needed. But it's really, really good helpline to use. Some helplines are 24 hours. Some are just at certain times, depending on the area.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I think the majority are 24 hours due to the COVID situation that we're in at the minute. And obviously, like you said at the beginning, it can be increasing the low mood and the anxiety for new parents.
Yeah.
There also would be a local, what we call IAP service, which is improving access to psychological therapies. Again, there will be a local IAP service in your area, and it's about looking it up and contacting them. Often it's a self-referral. And again, that can be a really useful service if you're wanting some sort of support regarding counselling or CBT, or signposting to some online services that are out there too, such as there's a Silver Cloud, there's a Big White Wall, there's all sorts of help and information available.
Superb. And we will put links to these, all of the things that Tracy's mentioning, on our show notes and the website. So don't worry about writing it all down now. Have a little look on the show notes and you can click on those at your leisure. So yeah, this is all fantastic, Tracy. So where else can folks find some glorious help?
There's also the Mental Health Alliance. This has information and links on supporting perinatal mental health. And it's got some really useful links. I was looking on that again yesterday. It's all updated regarding the COVID situation. So, yeah, there's some really useful things. There's also apps available, as you know, that you can get on your phone that can help with your feelings of how, you know, if you're feeling low mood, if you're feeling quite anxious at this time. Because often with postnatal depression, the parent can feel anxious as well. Not necessarily, sometimes it's just low mood, but quite often parents will feel low mood, but also have these increasing anxieties. So there's other apps out there that can help. such as the Headspace app for mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Again, on the NHS website, there's links to all the approved apps. Some apps are free, but some you have to pay for. So it's worth just kind of doing a good search and finding the ones that are perhaps beneficial and free.
I absolutely agree. And I think just have a little good browse through and see there are plenty of places where people are trying to network, including websites like NetMums and other places where, you know, it is generally mums and dads who are, you know, happy to and wanting to share their experience. But I do want to point out as well that sometimes on forums, people who post on those things perhaps are having a lot of problems themselves and want to be vocal about it. And it's okay to just want to read. You don't have to be proactive and contribute to conversation or being in those places to feel part of that network too. Sometimes if you want to just be learning and looking at and feeling a part of a community in a passive kind of way, that can be helpful too. But at the same time, if you're able to when we are able to all get up and out and meet people again, it would be, I think, hugely beneficial to try and join and proactively have the energy and the positivity about, I'm just going to do it. I've got to do it. I've got to get up and out and really try and make the most of all those potential new relationships and friendships that will really help you through some hard times. So, yeah, I hope that the links that we'll put on, which Tracy has beautifully organised and researched and shared with us today, have a look on those and let us know, please do, if there are any others that you've found that we can share with people. And I will happily pop those on future episodes as well. So thank you very much, Tracy, for jumping on this first episode. I hope people appreciate the fact that, you know, those are fantastic potential starting points for, I guess, just enabling you to just be able to cope that little bit better with some of the ways you're feeling and some of the understanding that's needed to hopefully get through the day in a more positive way. Well, huge thanks to Tracy and thanks to all of my amazing contributors to this week's episode. I do hope sincerely that you find this useful and, well, please do ping us any thoughts on any aspect of the podcast on quirkyvoices@gmail.com. If you'd like to support my work and help to get more episodes out into this, quite frankly, crazy world, please do feel free to become a Quirky Voices Patreon or ping whatever you like to my Ko-fi account. It has all the details on the show notes and on the Quirky Voices website, where you can find some of my other adventures in audio. If you have an idea as to future medical issues we could explore, please also contact me and we can chat. It has to be said, I adore my absolutely wonderful cast of amazing women more than ever. So thank you so much to Diane Alexander as Flo, Lucy Shirley as Rachel, Kirsten Stansfield as Freya, who didn't appear in this episode, but no fear, she'll be back next week. And of course, the amazing Lara Parker as Gabby, and for so much. The show was beautifully executive produced by Fiona Thrale. The grooviest of music was by Matt Hutt and Zach Lemon, and this whole medically informative fun was produced, written, and, yeah, I love a bit of voice acting, by me, Sarah Golding. So thanks so much for listening. Have a cool week. We'll have more for you next weekend. Flo tries to cheer everyone up. Bye-bye.